Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around, waiting for the track to dry, is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Enjoying the World Cup? If you want proper analysis, honest opinions, and plenty of laughs along the way, give The Rest Is Football a listen. Gary Lineker, Alan Shearer, and Micah Richards break down the biggest games, the standout moments, and everything happening on and off the pitch with brilliant guests joining them throughout the tournament. Whether you followed football your whole life or you're just getting into it, they'll help you make sense of the drama, the tactics, the joy, and the heartbreak of the World Cup. Listen to The Rest Is Football wherever you get your podcasts.
And we are live. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I'm one of your co-hosts, Blake Ruffino. Alongside me is my counterpart and co-host, Joe DeLeon. Joe, I don't think I could ever be as mad as you, as the people of the great sport of college football are mad at Nick Saban right now. But nevertheless, good evening, good sir. How are you?
I find that to be a challenge. I'm sure that you will find a way to get mad at me, more mad at me than everyone is at Saban. I know we're going to get into it, but I was fully prepared for when we discussed the Protect College Sports Act today, that when I was doing my notes, I was going to be all ready and understanding, oh, this is why we're all against Nick Saban today. And when I was putting everything together, I was going through everything he said. I'm like, well, all those things kind of check out. Where was he wrong? I can understand maybe some pushback, but Saban was fine today. I don't think he's the savior of college athletics, but I think that maybe that's why people are upset, because he's not living up to everybody's expectation. Maybe that's what it is.
Can I tell you why he is? And we'll get into more of this. Well, let me say it like this. Do you know why I believe that Nick Saban could be the savior of college athletics? Because the people that can make the rules actually listen to him. They actually listen. So they're not listening to Greg Sankey. They're not really listening to Tony Petitti, even though I do believe that Ted Cruz did and Maria Cantwell did. We will get into that. And even though they denied exactly what the Big Ten and the SEC advised Congress to do, they didn't call for Tony Petitti. They didn't call for Greg Sankey. They called for Gordon Gee, Pete Bavakwa, who used to run NBC, and they called on Nick Saban, and they called on a player. So regardless of all of that, and we will kind of get into it, and we probably should just get into it now, but we will in just a moment. Actually, let's just get into it.
Yeah.
They actually listened to him. Joe, at the end of this, Senator Ted Cruz and Senator Maria Cantwell, on the behest of Nick Saban, said, okay, sounds good. We need to make amendments to this. So you want to talk about the savior of the sport? They might not have done that without him. They very well might have not done it without him and the things that he said. I think people are just wanting to be outraged to be outraged. So we'll definitely get into that, but it's absolutely ridiculous. So we will talk about the Protect College Sports Act here tonight. We will also talk about Texas Tech and Joey McGuire coming out and saying Texas is scared, but it does look like Sark is actually going to be the winner in all of this, Joe. Sark is going to be the one that wins here because...
I can't wait to talk about this.
Well, he called Texas scared, but did he get them to play a big P4 opponent that could be scheduled that very potentially can make them look like and say, well, look, man, you can't even beat Notre Dame, which is the rumor flying around Twitter that they're potentially going to be doing that with Notre Dame. I guess we'll see. Who knows who it's going to really be, but we'll talk about that here tonight as well. Is Texas running scared? And CBS's own Matt Zenitz and Chris Hummer are reporting that Faison Brandon looks to be potentially the day one starter at quarterback at Tennessee. We will break that down in its entirety as well. But everyone do us a favor and hit the like and share. If you're on YouTube, subscribe down below. Hit that notification bell. We greatly appreciate you doing that. Share to Facebook. Share to all of your social media accounts. We greatly, greatly appreciate you doing that. Wherever you listen to podcasts, rate, review, and subscribe. And if you're on the 24/7 Sports Twitter page, do us a favor. Hit that retweet button as well. Before we get rolling, speaking of our good partners and friends over at 24/7 Sports, there's a lot of recruiting, a lot of commitments going down. Multiple live recruitments went down today. Joe, by the way, how about Luke Fickell and company going into the state of Florida and getting the number one safety inside the state of Florida? Does Luke Fickell goes and gets Mekhi Williams. It's on the CBS 247, 24/7 Sports live commitment today. So keep up with all of your recruiting news and inside intel. Today, you can get 60% off by using the promo code RJ60 in an annual VIP membership. Again, that promo code is RJ60 at checkout. Get over to 24/7 Sports today. Use that promo code to keep up with recruiting and all of your favorite teams inside intel. All right, Joe, let's get into it here because we got lots that we need to discuss. So, since the last time that you and I have spoken, the SEC and the Big Ten have come out with a joint statement saying that they are not going to back and be behind the Protect College Sports Act. This comes after Greg Sankey said that he had not read the bill and wanted to wait at SEC spring meetings. And I do find it funny that the Big Ten allowed, I say allowed, but they, I guess, allowed the SEC to be the ones that announced this. But the SEC and the Big Ten came out with an announcement they are not going to back the Protect College Sports Act. Greg Sankey and Tony Petitti both admit that they believe that there's multiple things that hurt or would hurt college athletics inside the bill and go against already federal law. It is also being reported that Tony Petitti and Greg Sankey are set to meet with Senators Cruz and Cantwell tomorrow to go over things that need to be amended on the Protect College Sports Act. Today, former Alabama and LSU head coach Nick Saban met with Congress, and boy, did Twitter go ablaze. Joe, I kick this off to you. What are your thoughts about the Big Ten and the SEC not backing this bill, wanting amendments? And what are your thoughts of things that Nick Saban and, for what it's worth, Pete Bavakwa had to say today in front of Congress?
Yeah, there's obviously a lot to unpack. I'm going to start with the pooling of media rights issue because that was the biggest thing. And it's the reason why the SEC and the Big Ten came out with their joint statement saying that they were not going to back the bill. Everything else is a no-brainer, but very clearly the pooling of media rights does not serve the Big Ten and the SEC. And I roll my eyes at anyone who's saying, oh, of course the SEC and the Big Ten don't want to support this. They don't want to give up any of their power. They don't want to give up any of their standing because they've turned themselves into the top conferences. Yes. Why is that so hard to understand? They're not being selfish. This is enterprise. They've built themselves up into the best conferences in the sport. Why would they relinquish power by allowing for something that does not benefit them? And I think that one thing that was
actually hurts them. It hurts them.
It significantly hurts them because they have to be tied to other institutions that don't garner the same amount of eyeballs as the SEC and the Big Ten. And I understand that it is up to the SEC and the Big Ten and the other conferences to negotiate how the split would look. We now have multiple people that have come out and stated that it would not be easy to negotiate these things and to just simply put this plan together. It would be a giant mess because there's so many institutions. Greg Sankey came out and said that he doesn't think that it would be easy. But during this hearing, Pete Bavakwa, who his opinion should be the one that we're listening to the most because he wasn't just Notre Dame's athletic director. He was a former NBC sports executive. Mm-hmm. If there's somebody that understands this stuff, it's Pete Bavakwa. And you know what he said, Blake? He said that he doesn't see that there would be a large increase in media rights value from pooling rights. And he also says that it would be difficult in order for them to work that out. So why the hell are we adding this if the one guy who's got experience in this arena is saying it would be marginal, the amount of money that would be brought up with this? I think that
it would be marginal for him is what he said at the end. It would be marginal for Notre Dame and both of the big conferences. He did go on to say that it wouldn't be marginal for the Big 12 and the ACC, just so we're clarifying what he specifically said.
Yes, but that's not wrong.
He's right.
But it's to that point is, why would the SEC and the Big Ten complicate things? And then be at the mercy of whatever happens with the other conferences for future media rights deals. It just, it never has made sense. And I think that if Ted Cruz has any sense and Cantwell has any sense, who she stated that she does not want to back off of the pooling of media rights, if they have any sense, they'll remove that because it's the only thing standing in their way. And it's going to be pure stubbornness if they try to keep it in. For if there's one damn thing that they need to be on the same page with the SEC and the Big Ten, it's this stuff. Relinquish that one thing.
Well, they did say it was optional. So can I be a little blunt with you? I understand. Like, hear me out for just a moment. They didn't put that in the law. They gave them the option to do it. So the SEC and Big Ten. So to be blunt with you, I don't really understand if it's optional why the SEC and the Big Ten are freaking out because you don't have to do it. That's what I didn't understand. The word literally is in there and states that it's optional. So I understand why you would say, hey, we're not going to do that. But Joe, if I would have told you 10 years ago that this would be college football today, you would have slapped me in the face and called me crazy. You would say there's no way that we're going to have $40 million rosters. You never know what's really going to happen. However, you're right. They do need to take that out because there's there's also ramifications and potential things that could happen that would come of it that don't need to come of it. Now, to add on to that, there's something I got to say here. I don't think Senator Ted Cruz, after listening to him today, nor Maria Cantwell have any idea what they're talking about. Can I tell you why? The Lane Kiffin rule that me and you argued over today or last week. In reference to that, just stay with me. I'm not spending a long time on it. He literally stated today that what I thought would be a problem, that he wants the Lane Kiffin rule to be where institutions can't even talk to coaches that are in the playoff, where I don't necessarily mind that. Okay, then we have to fix the schedule first. I don't want to fight and hash that back out with you. Joe, he didn't even realize when the portal opened, by the way. He had no clue. He had no clue about early signing day. He had no clue about the portal and said that coaches, that institutions can't talk to coaches. Well, then there's a scheduling problem there, which Saban, which this didn't get clipped, Saban brought up to Congress and nobody said a word. Nobody said a word about the scheduling problem, which has been my fight on Twitter today. But can I tell you something that really bothered me here? Ted Cruz came out on three and today and stated with the 5-for-5 rule that he wants to see teams have situations where players still redshirt. Do you see a problem there?
Yeah,
there is no more redshirting. That doesn't even happen anymore. So how do you put this bill together and say that, well, for the 5-for-5 rule, we want to come out and say that there should be instances where teams still have the ability to redshirt players? That's not even plausible, Joe. They don't even know. So to the point about what you just stated about Pete Bavakwa going out there and saying, hey, I don't think these institutions are going to pay more money for a media rights polling, regardless if they believe they should be getting more or not. The 5-for-5 rule and them not understanding when the portal and recruiting happening, which should have been not even a problem. I don't even know if I have a problem with it, by the way. I don't even know if I have an issue with it, by the way, if you would change the football schedule. But can I bring something up to you right now? Have you thought about the other sports? Have you thought about basketball? Because the more that I started thinking about this, have you thought about baseball? Have you thought about women's basketball? Have you thought about softball? Have you thought about every sport that this would impact? Joe, just to be honest with you right now, we have another month of college baseball. Another month. The portal's open. The portal is literally open, and we have another month. So if you can't tell players where and what you're targeting and who you're targeting, It's a massive problem for basketball. It's a massive problem for baseball. We are looking this at the prism of football alone, which was what Nick Saban stated. Joe, today clarified for me that we kept asking Congress to get involved and they don't understand. Now I'm about to freak out. Are you ready?
Okay.
Here's my freak out. Ted Cruz met with Tony Battiti 6 months ago. He met with Greg Sankey 6 months ago. These were the five things that are in the bill that Greg Sankey and Tony Battiti told Ted Cruz and Maria Cantwell that they wanted in the bill. All of them, all five things. They didn't talk about media rights. I understand that's a new addition, but they did have the conversation of it. In January, Joe, January the 6th, it came out that the conversations between Ted Cruz and Maria Cantwell to Tony Battiti and Greg Sankey had happened about these things that are in the bill. And then they said that they've needed Congress for so long. And then they said, you know what, man, we're not going to do this. Can I tell you what? That's a slap in every college fan's face. You have been bitching and moaning for 5 years that you needed legislation, that you needed Congress to act. They asked you what you wanted them to do. They did it. They did it exactly how you wanted it. Now, there were things added, which we'll get to in just a moment, like congressional oversight, which Nick Saban also brought up, that can't happen. But even in that, you asked them for all of these problems and you shot down five other things, which I understand. And these things need to be amended. But it looks horrible from Tony Battiti and Greg Sankey that the five main things that you went to them 6 months ago and brought up 5 months ago, whatever it is, that you went to them and said that we needed to be changed, that then you spit in their face. It's exactly what they did. So stop telling me that you wanted Congress to act when now the both of you are trying to split from the NCAA and the College Sports Commission and do your own collective bargaining agreement, which is what you should have done in the first place. So do you need Congress to act? This is my opinion. I have no backing by sourcing on this at all. Joe, I think they want the chaos. I think Tony Battiti and Greg Sankey want this high level of chaos because it brings eyeballs. In December, when Jordan Seaton, Brendan Sorsby, Prince Will, Cam Coleman, you name the player that goes into the portal, all hell breaks loose. All hell breaks loose. And then from a social media standpoint, from a conference standpoint, you have nothing but views on top of views on top of views that makes the sport absolutely massive. I don't think they want it because even though I think they would have come out and said, hey, we don't agree on every point, they would have reacted just like Nick Saban did. At the end of his thing today in his 11-minute speech, Nick Saban came out and said, now listen, I back the bill from the foundation of it. However, you can't have congressional oversight, and quite honestly, you're not completely following the rules of the House settlement, and players should not be capped based off of what you believe they should be capped at. So, Joe, I look at this and say, you have been moaning and moaning and moaning for 5 years. You give them something that they need to work on, and you just come out with a statement and say, no way. Now, they're going to meet with Ted Cruz and Maria Cantwell tomorrow, and let me tell you what better happened. What better happen tomorrow is that they better come out and they better say and come to an agreement and how, and so we can get this thing passed and so that we have legislation. Now, the only thing that I agree with everybody on today, Joe, these agents have got to be capped. They've got to be. The 20% that is out there for most of these agents has got to be capped. But don't sit here and tell me for 5 years that you want Congress to act. You give them what they need to act on, and then you slap them in the face.
I think the slap in the face, though, for me, why they responded the way that they did is because they want to be the ones in control.
100%.
They want to be the ones that are driving the direction of the sport. And I don't think that they appreciated that the pooling and the media rights has been such a sticking point for this bill and for the support of the other conferences, other teams, and power brokers in college football, because it is a direct shot at the Big Ten and the SEC. Mm-hmm. Albeit it is optional, it is a shot at them because they want to be able to allow for other conferences to be able to catch up to them. That's the whole point of it. The Big Ten and the SEC have been putting in the work and have been building themselves up into the two premier conferences in college athletics. So now we're expecting that the playing field be completely leveled, which I'm fine with that premise that things should be more balanced across the board. It makes things more interesting and entertaining to watch when the competition is better. But Blake, there's a reason why, to me, why they're responding the way that they are, is that they wanted the changes to come in their favor. That's what it is. I don't think that there's any way around that. They wanted what was going to be presented to be angled towards them because they are the leaders of the sport. And the complete opposite happened. And they keep bringing up issues that are directed at them, that they're the ones that they're causing. I don't blame them for operating that way.
What issues are they causing?
In regards to the media rights stuff is what I mean by that. Like in terms of...
They're not causing that, right? Like, I see, here's a problem that I have too. The Olympic sport thing was a big topic of discussion today, right? That if we keep going doing this, and football and basketball is going to keep generating all the revenue, then we're going to lose Olympic sports. Okay, I don't want to lose Olympic sports either, or women's sports or anything like that. But here's the problem. How long has football carried all of those sports and now you want to cry wolf? Now you're crying about it. I'm sorry. I love what has been happening in softball and the Women's College World Series. I love it. I watch it every single night. I love when women's basketball gets entertaining. I love when guys like Mato Duplantis go to the Olympics and you have records being broken. I mean, hell, LSU, for an example, has an amazing track and field program. But football has been funding you for 3 to 4 decades. And so, I have a problem with them saying and coming out and saying, well, the Big Ten and the SEC needs to get in line. In line for what? Like, I'm just being serious. In line for what? They don't need to get in line for anybody. Now, there's a double-edged sword or another side of that coin that you bring up that I also 1,000% agree with you. This is a power stroke by Petitti, and it's a 100% power stroke by Greg Sankey. Can I tell you what I think of the both of them? I think that they go out in public and argue with one another, a lot like what me and you do, but behind the scenes, they're best friends.
Oh, well, and I think that was one of my big thoughts with this, is that as much as we think that they have animosity towards one another, I don't think that's true at all. I think that the differences on how they see the college football playoff is this is going to be a funny way of putting it. It's almost like a lover's quarrel. You know, it's like the two, they're in bed with one another and they're completely tied to one another, but they're hourly fighting and they're trying to grab whatever support that they can on either side. I don't think that they hate one another. I forget which book it was that I recently read. It's behind me. The Price, which was written by John Talty, which is a really good book. I just finished reading it. And it was talking about in there how he hated what?
CBS Sports.
Yes. Yeah. It was a very good book. I recommend everybody read it because it's about a lot of the recent changes that have happened. And in there was talking about how Kevin Warren, Greg Sankey hated him, but he really likes and respects Tony Petitti because he felt like there was a lot more collaboration that could be had with him. So they're on the same page. They're in his cahoots as much as possible. And that joint statement that came out could not have been more blatant, obvious evidence of that they're working together, because all the fighting that we think is occurring, they just suddenly come together to put together this statement. No, they understand where they sit. And I agree with you, but I disagree with where you were taking that. You were saying that you think that they want the chaos, but I don't think that they want the chaos because they want the attention. I think that they want the chaos because they want everything else to fall apart around them so that they can prevail. I mean, it was talked about in here. I think Cantwell brought up that the ACC and the Big 12 sent the letters in support that they did, unlike the SEC and the Big 10, because they don't want to become the Pac-12.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's absolutely true, because they understand that they're currently powerless. They're currently as powerless as they possibly could be because the SEC and the Big Ten control everything.
I don't necessarily disagree, right? Like, it is a power struggle. But here's another thing to that, though. I don't know how to explain this other than bringing in like a marriage that you kind of just alluded to. That's like me going, or my wife coming to me and saying, hey, I want you to do these five things. Then I do those five things, and then she gets mad about how I did them. You get what I'm saying? Like, how is that even plausible? Like, how is that even remotely plausible that you can say that you want those five things to be done? I get it's a power trip, but there are going to be amendments to this bill. There needs to be amendments to this bill. The number one amendment to this bill that has to happen, must happen. There can't be congressional oversight. Cannot be congressional oversight. You can't give them autonomy to do whatever they want. Can't happen. Because, Joe, this is a government, by the way, that can't even balance their own checkbook, and you want them to balance the money that's going in and out of college athletics? No way. So I agree with Nick on that, and I agree with the Big Ten, and I agree with the SEC on that. Speaking of Nick Saban, thoughts on everybody freaking out on the former head coach's statements today in front of Congress?
Yeah, as I said at the beginning, I think it hasn't really made any sense to me. I didn't really understand why everybody was jumping all over him. And I think part of it is that there's this assumption that Nick Saban has to save college football. And I think that a lot of people created this superhero in their heads that was just going to come in and say all of the right things and know how to fix everything because he was the greatest coach of all time. And the way that I interpreted this is his quotes, they were pretty benign. I just saw it as him firing off a few takes, and I don't think very many of them were really that impactful. And it goes positive and negatively. I don't think that either they were so transformative and insightful that they fixed college athletics, nor did I think that they were so negative in the way that it completely undermined the whole process and all of those things. And a lot of people were criticizing him for being a hypocrite, for talking about NIL and making it seem like he doesn't want athletes to get paid. I think that there is a bit of an overreaction because people are just disappointed that he's not living up to what everybody was hoping for.
Here's the problem that I have. So Nick Saban spoke in front of Congress today, and it got a lot of people upset. A lot of people were calling him a hypocrite. A lot of people were saying, well, you used to do this. You paid players. You were the reason that the sport is the way that it is. No, he did not do this. He did not start the Ed O'Bannon case. He didn't. He wasn't the reason for the House settlement case. So for those out there, especially in media that are out there saying that Nick Saban was the fault of this, what did he say that was a lie? You can hate the messenger, but not hate the message. See, Joe, I will push back on one thing. The only reason that he's the face of this is because he's the greatest head coach of all time. And when the greatest head coach of all time says something, you better shut up and listen because he's not wrong. He told you exactly in 2021 where this was going. He told you when the whole argument happened with Alabama and Texas A&M, when the collective started, hey, this is only going to rise. Players are going to get paid, not for name, image, and likeness. They're going to get paid, technically, I don't want to say underneath the table, but a pay-for-play scheme, which is exactly what collectives do. These are the main talking points that Nick Saban said today, and in no specific order. Agents should have caps. Collectives are killing the sport. Trinidad Chambliss should not be eligible. Tampering is something that we cannot enforce because everybody just gets sued. Luke Farrelly should not be at Ole Miss. He should be at Clemson. There should be no congressional oversight, and that the Lane Kiffin rule is a scheduling problem. Please tell me exactly where he's wrong. He would go on to say that if we continue down this path in this arms race, that Olympic sports and non-revenue generating sports will be no longer if we continue. Where is he lying? So this is what people are doing. People are saying, well, Nick did this and Nick did that at Alabama, and he's just mad because other teams get to do it. No, literally the opposite. Literally the opposite, because if he would to allow for this to go on, there would be so much parity in the sport that nobody can catch him from a national championship standpoint. Why would he want this to not continue? Because no one can catch him. He will be known as the greatest coach of all time. He warned you when he was coaching. And they were like, people are saying, well, Nick left because of how NIL was going. He's in his mid-70s. He's in his mid-70s. It's time for him to go. Like, what are you even talking about? So to all of those in media that are saying that he is the reason this was caused, pick up a book. Like, you are the dumbest people alive when you say he's the reason that this happened. Do you know anything about the sport at all? Nothing he said was a lie. Fine. He ran the sport for 2 decades. We hate him because he beat the shit out of everybody. You can hate him because of that. But what did he say that was wrong? And this is the thing, too, that needs to be understood. College football fans also can be hypocritical. You have been begging and pleading for change for 5 years now, begging and moaning just like the conferences about change. And then the one man that can go to Congress and has the ear not only of senators, but the president of the United States, you want to shoot him down to not doing this so that we don't have change. Do you see how hypocritical that is? There's nothing he said that was wrong. Ole Miss fans are mad at him because he talked about Trinidad Chambliss. Joe, the truth of the matter is Trinidad Chambliss shouldn't be playing. I'm sorry. He's been in college for 6 years. You're about to pass a rule of 5 for 5 where he wouldn't be eligible in 3 years. He wouldn't be eligible. So it dumbfounds me to see that the man that knows exactly what he's talking about, telling you where the sport is going, he was right 5 years ago. What happens if he's right in 5 more years? What if you have club teams and this continues to be an arm race and nothing's done about it? The final thing I would say is, a lot of people don't want him to quote unquote be the commissioner. Fine. Don't let him be the commissioner, nor do I think that he would want it. But you can't look at this message and say that anything that he stated was wrong. You're being a hypocrite. You know that change needs to happen. And you don't disagree with anything that he said. You know how I know? Because all of you were in our comment section saying the same exact thing that he did. Same exact thing. When Indiana had a seventh year safety, a lot of you freaked out about it. So why are you freaking out about it now? And here's the last thing. You know what Nick Saban didn't say? Not once today did he say that he did not believe that players should not get paid. Not once. Not once. He said the opposite. So I'm just lost in why people are mad at, yes, be mad at, you're mad at the messenger because when he lined up against your favorite team, he kicked your teeth in. That's why you're really mad. But you can be mad at that, but look at the message and say that he's exactly right.
Well, and the accusations of people that are mad at him are coming for two reasons. They're coming for one, you got Ole Miss people and just in general that are saying, well, you're telling me Nick Saban didn't tamper with a player? We don't have any evidence of that. You're telling me that Nick Saban didn't go around paying players in order to get them to come play? He didn't outwardly state that players shouldn't be making money. He was merely pointing out the way that NIL is operating, the way that it's moving. I actually thought that the most insightful thing overall that was brought up, Saban, I think, touched on it, but Bavakwa spoke on it quite deeply, the alteration of the cap. And I really liked the concept of a luxury tax, because if you have a luxury tax, it allows for teams just to spend as much as they want. And I don't know how it really works in the MLB and in the NBA where that money goes after you pay the luxury tax.
It goes to Major League Baseball. Major League Baseball disperses that money to all of the, so for example, in Major League Baseball, So let's say the Dodgers are always going to be above the luxury tax. Okay.
Right.
You can Google this, but correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, I am. I'm asking.
All right, Google it. I'm pretty confident that it's dispersed to all of the other 29 teams or the other teams that aren't over the luxury tax.
Yeah, wait, this says 50% to player retirement accounts, 50% to the supplemental commissioner's discretionary fund. This portion is distributed among teams that receive revenue sharing money and have successfully grown their local non-media revenue. So it is how you said it. So I think that concept is something that nobody has brought up and would be the most perfectly...
Where would it go? Where would it... Let me ask you this.
I would put that towards... 50. I would do it the same exact way. I would put 50% of it towards a medical trust and retirement account, something for players, like some sort of a trust that they can't touch that money for a period of time, like whatever it is, just completely break it up into, I don't know what the money would be, just say $10,000 or something like that. Put that into an account for them that they can't touch until they're a certain age. That's a huge benefit for a player if that's something that's built. And then the medical benefits is something that's been talked about, but you should have medical benefits covered for you for your lifetime. You're playing a sport, football specifically, where you completely destroy your body. Some of these guys have issues that pop up much later down the line. And then I think the other portion of that could be redistributed across, if there's the cap, it goes towards the conference. Maybe it's redistributed across the teams at the bottom of the conference, something along those lines. If you want to create parity, I think creating parity in that regard, if you want to spend that much money, you have to consider that you're paying the pockets of the teams and the rest of the conference. I think that something in that regard would be really brilliant. Instead of getting pissed off, to bring it back to Saban, instead of getting pissed off at Nick Saban for talking about how the convolution of NIL and how it's not operating the way that it was supposed to. And most importantly, the one thing that he brought up that was really true was that schools are utilizing the multimedia rights, dollars, and money from sponsorships to just go directly to players when a lot of that money should really be going to Olympic sports and women's sports. I'm not saying all of it, but there are portions of that that probably don't need to just be going towards NIL for players.
Which is exactly what he just said.
No, it is. That is what he said, and we're pissed off about that.
Right. I don't... Oh, I don't get it. I don't understand it. So it is what it is. I'm sure we'll talk about this more. By the way, you know that today marks the 13th time that we've talked about this in a month to some degree.
Did you go back and count that?
I went back and counted because me and Cooper Patagno were talking about it today. I'm like, this is like the 13th time that we've talked about it in a month. This is ridiculous. All right. Let's move forward here. Did you want to get to, I know this isn't really recruiting, but Jaden Bryant just flipped from LSU to Miami.
I kind of want to get to the Texas Tech and the Faison Brannan thing. I have not dug into that. So
in theory, he's mad. Here's our Jaden Bryant take. You ready? In theory, he's mad that LSU offered and went after two other five-star edge guys.
That sucks.
Not if LSU lands KJ Green, it's not. All right, here we go. So Joey McGuire has not been very quiet over the last 48 to 72 hours. Today came out with a statement and says that they are going to be doing a home-and-home with a massive P4 brand. Speculation hit Twitter today that they might be Notre Dame, Joe's favorite team here. But even in the statement, he takes an unprovoked shot back at Texas. He said, it will not be Texas that we schedule this home-and-home with. It won't be Texas because they scared to play us. Joe, what are your thoughts on number one, potentially Texas Tech playing Notre Dame, but him calling out Texas and saying that they're scared to play us?
This is hilarious. So we spent the last time talking about this, breaking down how it was a brilliant way to win the press conference if you were Texas Tech. There was no way to respond if you were Steve Sarkisian in Texas unless you played them, and that would make your schedule way too hard, or if you just ignored him and you look soft. Well, the reality is now is I think that Sark won this. I think that Sark mind-gamed Joey McGuire so hard that Texas Tech is now in talks to add more competitive non-conference opponents to their upcoming schedules. Because 2026, we already broke down their schedule. It's soft. It is really, really soft. They're still a really good team, but they're not being challenged. Their hardest non-conference game, Blake, Oregon State this upcoming year. Matt Zenitz of CBS Sports had reported that Notre Dame and USC were the two teams that they're potentially in talks for. And I think that this is great. I think that they should want to play both of them. At the very least, they should play Notre Dame.
Of course you do.
Okay. No, forget the Notre Dame angle for a second here. Well, it's good for Notre Dame to have a multiple opponents in Texas because Marcus Freeman has recruited aggressively in the state of Texas. He's actually pulled a lot of really important players in the roster from the state of Texas. So there's an impact there. And I'm sure that Notre Dame is going to say yes to this and sign off for it and end up adding it to the schedule because it'll make their resume a little bit tougher. But Texas Tech needed to play a team like Notre Dame and a brand like USC. They needed to. If you want to be treated in the same light as the other top brands in college athletics, and you can't fully mirror the competition of the SEC and the Big Ten, you got to be willing to play those that are available. Notre Dame is going to be the most available opponent. But he really might have gotten duped into scheduling a tougher opponent. I think that he thinks that he won this whole thing, but I don't know if that's really the case because he didn't have to add Notre Dame and USC to the upcoming schedules.
Sark won because I don't see them beating Notre Dame currently where they sit. Are they doing better in recruiting? Yes. Are they getting better guys like Jalen Brewster is committed? They've gone in the state of Georgia and grabbed a couple of guys. That means nothing when you don't have good quarterback play. Joe, who can I throw this your way? We were so hyped up for Texas Tech last year, right? Because a team in the Big 12 started spending money a lot like some of the big boys, and yet they go to the playoffs and they get their teeth kicked in. And it seems to me that they've forgotten that they got their teeth kicked in. Like, am I crazy for, like, it seems, let me tell you what this feels like to me. Texas Tech feels like a boxer that's undefeated coming up and beat a bunch of nobodies and then got knocked out by a dude that's actually ranked and then act like he won the fight. Right? Like, you didn't win the fight here. Texas Tech is making these claims, and Joey McGuire is making these claims about Texas. Texas is going up against Ohio State in week two, and you believe that they're scared of you? They have also scheduled Notre Dame. You think that they're scared of you? You know what the funniest thing of all time will be? The funniest thing of all time will be Texas and Texas Tech both are going to be playing Notre Dame. At least it's on the schedule for now. What happens if Notre Dame beats down Texas Tech and then Texas beats them? And Texas beats Notre Dame.
We're gonna have to do the transitive property bit
No, I'm not talking about transitive property. What I would say here is they could still have the big brother syndrome and be like, we did something that you couldn't. We're still the big brother. We're still stronger than you. We still have more money than you. We're still the bigger brand than you. And there's never anything that you can do about it. With all due respect, Sark in Texas, although they got punked and they need to play him, he duped you into you going to play in Notre Dame, which you're not better than Notre Dame. You're not. And you're not going to be better than them under Marcus Freeman. Joe, I feel like Texas Tech is walking around with some kind of cocky, you know, tenure about them. When you got knocked out, the last fight that you got in, you got knocked out and you're acting like you won the fight. How about you have some humility to yourself? But Sark won this. And Sark made a statement about Texas Tech today. He goes, man, again, my words are being misconstrued. I was talking about the playoff and the strength of record and the strength of schedule. And I'm talking about a team that is, he's talking about the Big 12. Now, he says that after the fact. He's still taking shots at them. But who does Joey McGuire and Texas Tech think that they are? Like, I'm sorry. Like, Joe, I feel like as I get older, I feel like I get dumber. Like, how could you make that statement after Oregon just blanked you? You don't have a starting quarterback right now. Like, what are we doing?
I mean, Texas Tech is going to have a really good team this year. And they should, even with Will Hammond for three quarters of the season, win the Big 12. And I think that goes to show how bad their schedule is and the lack of competition that they have coming up, that they're still going to probably win the conference. I would really love to get to see, and he said this on Pate's show, that he wants to play him in the playoff. I'd love to see him play because I think they would add to the drama if they played in the playoff. It'd be really, really exciting after all of this. And I think it could be pretty good competition. I don't think it's going to, they're going to get dog walked by Texas in any regard, but
I think they get dog
with all the whole point with all of this, Blake, is that it's just so stupid. You're trying to make this whole point and prove, hey, we're not as soft as you claim, play us. And they're adding these games to the schedule immediately after the fact. Unless this has been in the works for a really, really long time, I'd find the timing like a little bit hilarious if it was something that had been in the works for a while.
I'm sure that this has been in discussions, okay? But you also have to understand public relations. And you know what else you don't need to do? You're taking shots at Texas for what? I mean, again, do I think Texas, after they called out Texas Tech, right, wrong, or indifferent, should have played them this year? Yes. You can't have Cody Campbell going out there and saying, I'm going to buy out everything, and then be in a situation where you don't play them. I'm sorry, Texas is going to have a black eye there. And right now, do they? You know, that's my real question. Does Texas have a black eye right now? No one's talking about it. Literally no one's talking about it. And you know what? Texas Tech feels some type of way about it. Everybody knows what would happen here. Joe, I'm sorry, but there comes a point in time when a team, it's like Indiana, right? Like, let's explain Indiana for just a second. 2 years ago, Indiana had a really good season, but got dog walked by the big opponents. When they played Ohio State and they played Notre Dame, they got dog walked. Is that fair? In year one under Kurt Cignetti? And so when we go into year two, we look in this and say, yeah, they had a really good season. Are they going to be able to build off of that? Okay, sounds good. Well, they won a national title. So you always have those conversations. But you know what Kurt Cignetti and them didn't do? They didn't go out there and say and beat their chest and say, hey, man, we're going to back down from anybody that we got to play. They just went out there and played and won. They didn't talk no smack. And then when they got blanked, they just went and got better. You got blanked and you're talking crap like you're some big dude at the bar when you got your stuff pushed in. Like, that's the thing that bothers me the most. What bothers me the most is that you really think that Texas is scared of you. Give me a break.
Well, the other part with this that wasn't brought up, in order for – this is why the whole thing is kind of eye-rolling, where the expectation that they're just going to generously offer to play you and not make adjustments to their schedule, it's not that they're afraid of competition and that they're afraid of playing you. You're trying to call them out in order to motivate them into making the change, but they have no reason to. They already have for 2027 and 2028 their non-conference matchup set up. Next year they're playing Michigan and Notre Dame. So that's already locked in. They'd have to drop one of those opponents in order to play Texas Tech, which is possible. They've talked about dropping the Notre Dame game, but if you're going to drop that and replace it with another Power Four opponent or whatever you decide to end up doing, probably not doing it with Texas Tech. You're probably trying to schedule Wake Forest or somebody that's a little bit more beatable. I think that it's just a little lame that is the angle that they're coming at here, is that they don't want to play him. Texas would have to completely change their schedule. It's just like how I kept getting mad about the whole Notre Dame USC thing, where Lincoln Riley and USC fans were trying to paint it as if Notre Dame was afraid to schedule them. No, their schedule is already locked in. There is no way to change it unless they went above and beyond to change it. It is a circumstance where Texas Tech is trying to establish in this way that they know that they're going to still look good by making all these claims. And I agree with you on this. As much as I support the growth of Texas Tech and I think that they're on the way up, I do kind of hate that they're turning into this where they're talking a lot of crap and they haven't proved themselves yet. Right. They won the conference, which was great, but let's win a playoff game first. Let's win games against non-conference opponents first before we start pretending like we're one of the big dogs.
What has the Big 12 proven in the last two seasons? Well, I'm asking you, what have they proven? That Texas can play up and down to the level of their competition? Is that what you're trying to convince me of? I mean, because it's exactly what Steve Sarkisian teams do. They'll get in dogfights with Kentucky, and they'll beat A&M, they'll beat Oklahoma, they'll get in a dogfight with the national champion in Ohio State, more than Notre Dame did, for what it's worth. They're at the two-yard. Joe, they went to overtime with Arizona State. It is the Steve Sarkisian blueprint to play up and down to the level of your opponent. And meanwhile, you can barely get past the 50-yard line. They could barely get past the 50. I'm tired of this. You're right. I'm tired of seeing what they're becoming. Like, put your head down. Everybody was rooting for you. Constantly chapping and telling other teams that they're scared of you when you got kicked out of the bar, it's not a way to go about it. All right.
No.
Before we get out of here, Joe, CBS Sports is reporting, Matt Zenitz and Chris Hummer are reporting, that former five-star quarterback Faison Brandon is positioning himself to be a day one starter. Got multiple quotes in the article here, just to read off some, where some of the quotes from Matt Zenitz are as followed, that George McIntyre operated the offense better during spring. However, Faison Brandon is just so gifted that he very well may be the day one starter for Tennessee going into the season. What is your reaction? I know you've been very high on Faison Brandon. Here it is, Joe. He might be the starting quarterback day one for the Tennessee Volunteers.
Yeah, my whole take with this aligns with the reporting that was done by Zenitz and Hummer, that basically McIntyre looked like the player that has been in the system longer, that has been around longer and looked more comfortable and has the edge in the competition after the spring. But there was just such a separation between Faison Brandon's talent and his personality and his confidence that even if it's close and George McIntyre's slightly ahead, it makes too much sense to not turn things over to Faison Brandon. My whole argument with this, Blake, has always been that they should play the young guy that has the higher ceiling. If Faison Brandon is just a step behind George McIntyre, it is better for the future of the program to go with the younger player that has more upside, because they're similar in eligibility. If you start McIntyre, what are we going to relitigate the quarterback competition next year? Is that what we're going to do? The way that it was described in here, it makes too much sense to me that if you've got a dude that they were blown away by, there were multiple instances where he had wow throws. It was really impressive, some of the throws that he had during the spring, that they were just blown away by how he was able to operate in that manner. If that's the case, let the kid go out there and make some mistakes, because either way, you're starting a player who's never played before, never been a full-time starter, and there's going to be growing pains. You're telling me that there's going to be such a drop-off in a guy who's been in the system for 1 year and a player who's a true freshman? I find that hard to believe, that it'd be such a risk to put Faison Brandon out there in an offense that is notoriously quarterback-friendly.
What do you have to lose?
That's my point.
Joe, the last time we saw two true freshmen start, Bryce Underwood and DJ Lagway happened. Both of those coaching staffs got fired, and I am not saying that Josh Heupel is going to, but do you think that Josh Heupel is a little bit on the hot seat coming off? I know 2 years ago he made the playoff, but I don't know if he's not. Look, man, things have not been particularly well. He's winning. So, but they're not particularly well. The Nico situation, the Buchholz situation, and now the Coleman situation. I'm starting to scratch my head here in reference to Heupel overall. I think Faison Brandon, for what it's worth, is a really talented quarterback. I think that given the time and the ability, he can be a very good quarterback. But, Joe, this is college football. You don't walk off into the Big Ten. You don't walk off into the SEC. And it's the same take that I had for Bryce Underwood, just so everyone understands. I just don't think that you can walk into the SEC with that schedule or the Big Ten and do something magical. I mean, he would have to be that level of special. Do I think the offense is can be very friendly for him? Yes. Do I think that he's going to get confused and teams are going to throw everything at him and he's just going to have to grow up and you're going to have to live with the growing pains? Also, yes. But he's probably right now, from a gifted standpoint, better than Joey Aguilar. But Joey Aguilar had 5 seasons of starting under his belt, whether it's JUCO or in the G6 ranks. You can't take away that experience. Joe, it's a mismanagement of the quarterback situation. It's been, because either you're turning to a redshirted freshman or a true freshman to figure this out for you. And normally when that happens, you're on a rebuilding mode and you're going to have to be patient. Is Tennessee fans going to be patient with that? That's the real question. So again, you and I normally take these in 1 year sample sizes for what it's worth. Do I think he's going to be a very good quarterback when this is all said and done? I do. Do I think that he has a lot of true freshman moments? Who wouldn't? Who wouldn't? But I got to tell you this too. What does this say to the locker room? And what does this say to George McIntyre? Like, dude, what? I just outperformed this guy, and because you think he's more gifted, I was better in the spring. This coming out now, I just think, would rub me the wrong way. I know in the piece, Zenitz and Hummer reported that there's still going to be an open competition, but this leash is going to be short on either, especially George McIntyre, to try to get Faison and Brandon in there. This doesn't settle anything for me at the quarterback position. I just don't know where they're going, to be honest with you. I know that sounds horrible, Joe. I think he's talented, but he's going to have a lot of freshman mistakes.
But you're going to have freshman mistakes from both players. So I'd rather go with the guy that's high upside.
No, I don't. Agree with you.
Learn and get on the field.
Yeah. No, hold on. I don't disagree with you on that. If you're going to play him, play him. Mine is more of a 50,000 foot overview of, you mismanage the entire quarterback situation to start off with.
So that is where I'm pushing back on you stating that, because Blake, I get that he didn't handle the Nico situation as well as he could have. We commended him for saying, I'm not doing this shit. Leave. Sorry, excuse me. Didn't mean to curse there. Just leave. If you want to play this game, I'm not playing games with you. I'm not doing this negotiation thing where you're going to hold me hostage. Just get out of here. He was put into an unprecedented situation that set a precedent that completely altered our perspective on what NIL was and player payment and how that whole thing operates. Nobody thought that that was possible. And I think that he's done the best that he could to bridge the gap. Now, where the mismanagement comes into play, wait, the mismanagement comes into play is that this past year in the transfer portal, they should have been more aggressive. It was a little weird how they operated, because they were kind of sitting on their hands thinking, maybe Joey Aguilar could come back. Oh, wait, maybe we should be interested in Sam Leavitt. Oh, wait, he doesn't want to come here. Oh, wait, we don't have Joey Aguilar. Damn, we have now 2 really inexperienced quarterbacks. That part was mismanaged, but it was really hard for them to navigate this with not a lot of options on the table in the transfer portal. They weren't going to throw money around the way that Miami did to do what they did with Darian Mensah. I think that this is the best that you could implement. Yeah. It's not like we're talking about a 3-star. We're talking about a 5-star, extremely talented kid who was regarded as one of the more ready to play freshmen of his recruiting class.
The last two ready to play,
that's a bad thing.
The last two ready to play true star five star freshmen that came in had horrible freshman seasons, quote unquote.
Yeah, but those are not correlative for what is going to happen with FaZe and Brandon. I don't think that's 100%
are. It's really hard to play quarterback. It's extremely hard as a true freshman to play quarterback.
If there's a system for somebody, here's the thing though. Dylan Raiola and DJ Lagway were playing in inept offensive systems. Josh Heupel runs one of the simplest systems in college athletics. Yeah, Joe Milton looked serviceable playing that system.
Yeah, but Nebraska played Dookie Water State and Rudy Poutek, and this dude's got to go to Georgia and to Bama, and you're going to tell me that he's not going to struggle?
He's going to get cooked in those games, but can they finish 8-4? I think that if I'm a fan of a team like Tennessee and I'm starting the five-star true freshman and he plays bad in those games, but my team goes 8-4, I'd feel pretty good because it's like, you know what? Well,
going 8-4.
I think they're going 8-4 team. We did the preview. I said 8-4 was possible.
And I told you were silly.
All right.
They ain't going 8-4. I'm sorry. They're not. Hypo's on the hot seat. It's coming. All right. You can't let Lane Kiffin walk off into Knoxville and take a dude that you're after, too. The perception is so bad. Like, that's horrible. Anyway. All right. $20 super chat from Dan says, Joe, you're mad. Nick killed Notre Dame every time bigly. Your argument has zero validity.
What argument is he talking about? I got distracted by this. I didn't have an argument. I was merely just saying, if anything, it was supporting Nick Saban. I said that I don't understand why everyone was upset at him. I think it's because everybody built him up.
He also says Bama and everything to do with the team and Notre Dame will never have become Bama.
Have you watched any of the Bama segments we've done? I have defended Bama more than anybody in the country.
He also says that Notre Dame has traditionally played cupcake schedules. So he's right there. Every single year in the fact they're too scared to join a real powerful conference, just always so smug about teams. But what did you say?
This is what I don't understand. Also, and I won't make this statement. You can disagree with it or with me or not. I am probably one of the least biased people that you're going to find that hosts a show. I hyped up USC this offseason. I have hyped up USC multiple times. That is the biggest rival of the brand that I root for. I don't know where he's coming from.
Yeah, I'm trying to sit here and think what you said other than defending Saban.
I got no idea.
I have no idea. $30. Yeah, thanks for the 30 bucks. Shaquan says, Blake, I know you posted it on Twitter, but ain't no way Jaden Bryant just flipped. Well, he did. Miami has a massive recruiting class and money talks and BS walks. I mean,
KJ Green's a good player if you guys get him. We broke him down on Best Pot Available. He's got some juice.
I think with Abraham Sesse and I think with KJ Green, LSU's turning up on them rubbed Jaden Bryant the wrong way.
Which is dumb. If you had a three-man rotation with pass rushers, that's like what that would be sick.
Well, and it's Miami. I mean, Jaden Bryant. Yeah, good on him. Sounds good. Lane's going to better land the other two. Dan also sends a $2 super chat, says, do you have a call-in show ever that would be BA? Not for you. Not when you make you say stuff we didn't even say.
To talk about this, the premise of doing a call-in show is fun, but the problem is
for post-games, and they're horrible. Some of them.
The thing is you need – it works for radio because you've got a producer who screens calls. So when they call in, you're like, all right, what do you want to talk about? And then they say some crazy stuff. And you go, all right, well, you're not getting on the phone. And they can tell if they're weird or not. We don't have a producer to do that. So it would just be too hard.
Well, let's just get Jack to do it. Maybe. He can screen the calls. Alex with $2 Super Chat says, Joe only hates Ohio State. Oh, man. They're after you today, bud, but they're paying you to do it. So it's okay.
I don't know what I did, man. I don't know what I did. I'm usually the one that's not getting, you're the one who's getting yelled at. Is this another? Oh, I appreciate you talking ass. I don't mind that. I don't mind that. I mean, that's the whole point of the show.
By the way, is that him and Cody Campbell next to College Football Playoff trophy that they're never going to get?
That's not Cody Campbell.
All right. We'll
appreciate
see y'all
super chat though.
Yeah, thank you. See y'all Sunday. Peace.